Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be covering three questions that international educators are asking this week. We'll get to those in just a minute, but I want to say a special shout out to everybody who's watching live here on Facebook. It's always good to have your contributions to our conversation every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And also those who watch on repeat or on our YouTube channel, thank you for making us a part of your international ed learning. I never want to ignore those that listen on the podcast. You guys who subscribe each week and make us a part of your workouts, of your downtime as you work, as you however you use our podcast content. Thank you for subscribing and making us a part of your week as well. So we'll get to the questions today in just a minute. But for those that are new to the Roundup, we do take the questions that we cover today from trends and news stories we've seen. And we put out a newsletter on Mondays each week called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And that incorporates both social media news as well as international ed news, and oftentimes where those overlap. And we cover those as a means to give you some more in-depth insight into those particular articles. And in particular, we cover here on the Roundup three or more of those stories that have potential implications for how institutions do what they do. And some of the decisions that you can make, that can be made, are oftentimes well above your individual pay grades, but certainly these are it's food for thought in many cases in terms of what we discuss here on the Roundup as you look to develop and modify your existing international education policies, international student recruitment in particular, and how they might be improved by using what you hear through the Roundup and through our newsletter content to help you better make the case for change at your own institution. So we'll get right into the questions, and today we're starting with one that is quite appropriate, though the question may seem a little odd, and that is, which colleges will win the fall semester? And winning is a relative term, as most of us will attest in these particularly trying and turbulent waters that we're all trying to navigate these days, in terms of adding value for our students and making sure that they are taken care of for our current students, but also how do we position our institution to prospective students who may be looking at us, looking at the larger U.S. situation, and trying to decide if the U.S. is still a realistic destination for them for next year. And that's something we'll talk about in winning and what that means later down the road as we look to communicating our successes and our value to international students. But the first question on which colleges will win this fall. We look to first to some articles that have grabbed attention. First up, we've seen cases spiking at universities around the country, and it's sort of, to be honest with you, it's sort of like a train wreck. You almost can't look away when you read these news stories, particularly from schools in the South, that to large state schools that have gone, that made commitments to be fully in person, and how their lack of control and having controls in place to prevent certain outbreaks that have occurred. It's really been surprising, to say the least, and but in another way not so surprising, given the nature of college students on large public campuses. There have been hundreds and hundreds of cases on a lot of state university campuses, but it's not those large state schools are not the only ones who have a significant outbreaks of COVID-19 on their campuses. We've seen that here in Ohio State, they're not yet in session, but as cases were, students were returning to campus, there were a lot of off-campus parties. The university actually took the very bold step of suspending 500 odd students that were determined to have been at these off-campus parties and acting outside of the protocols that the university had set up, even though these were off-campus, many of these were off-campus events, because they had posted on social media, as they typically do. College students were Ohio State were forced to pay the price for this. So the links to some of these inside higher ed stories, and also a Chronicle story on what on colleges that are perhaps winning this fall. And winning will be those that have prepared well for, in terms of how you define that, keeping case numbers down and preparing well for what the educational environment is going to be for students on campus. I'm dropping these links in the comments section so you can have those for reference, to so you can read more on those topics that are of interest to you. You see private schools also being impacted by this. That there was a there are many private universities that are and colleges that were expecting and are starting the year with 10 to 20% of their students not present, and that's a combination of declines in new enrollments from international students, among others, that haven't been able to get in the country, and others that either because they couldn't get visas in time and or their institutions had gone fully online, and being fully online means you're not going to have international students on campus this fall. So that has been there are a lot of private colleges in that situation that are or that maybe were overly reliant on international students that have become are seeing a big bite this fall if they hadn't planned in advance already to meet that. One college that I've done work with, the University of Oregon, they made the recent switch this week to go online, primarily online or mostly online, that their housing is still open for international students that could get there, but they recognize that most new international students may not be able to get in the country now, and certainly with the switch to online only or mostly online, they're probably not going to get allowed in, even if they were able to get a visa. So they've gone to what they're hashtagging no visa required, where for the first semester, for the first couple of quarters actually at Oregon, they're going to allow their international students, encourage their international students that are new to start fully online and then transition to campus once the situation has resolved itself and visas are again readily available. So that's something that that colleges that had those plans in place and to make that switch, it's important that they're now able to pivot quickly, and that's the word we all hate in higher ed these days, is pivot. We've pivoted so much, our heads are still spinning. But what we're seeing is smaller schools especially, the smart ones that are committing to having hybrid programs in particular, and I think in the grand scheme of things, smaller colleges are better able, if they're planned effectively and have testing protocols in place, to manage their students better and communicate with them better. Spoken with a colleague at Wesleyan who they are going hybrid, but they have allowed and had many of their new international students actually physically be able to arrive. Not all of them, obviously. Some are starting their term, first term from home in their home countries. So, they pushed the boat out early on the hybrid model. They had got their plans in place for housing. Most of their housing was already single person housing. So the dorm residence hall rooms were one person only anyway, most of them. So they had the facility available to do that for housing. They had testing protocols in place students are tested twice a week. So there's a lot of planning that they did to make sure that at this point in the fall, as they're just starting up, they were just going through orientation this past week, that they are now ready to go, and the students that are here are able to be safe, and they hadn't had any cases in during orientation for new students where they did testing twice. That's they're off to a great start in that respect. Whether that continues to TBA, but obviously they had structures in place to manage systems on housing, on food, on quarantine, on on education. So I think that there's a lot of value to campuses that did start early in planning, not just for hybrid, but for those that are, and we still yet to see how Purdue's grand scheme is going to end up. But we've seen schools like Notre Dame, they started fully in person. They went online for 2 weeks, and now they're pivoting back to in person after they've seen a decline in cases on campus. So we'll see how that develops. A lot of these big schools that are having these challenges, particularly in the South, are heavily dependent on their football programs for revenue. They're going to start having football games in the coming weeks with limited capacity, where instead of 80,000 people in the stadium, you might only be able to have 15 to 20,000 students come in, or capacity in a stadium. So we'll see really what happens. I know there's Iowa State's dealing with this issue too, in terms of their football schedule and how that's impacted in terms of classroom or students in the stands. But we'll see really how these all play out in the coming weeks and months. But winning will in this environment requires a lot of prior planning for different realities and being able to change their practices quickly when the need arises, and also testing that has to be a successful part of that. When we look at some of the classes, one of the Chronicle article in particular focuses on the Cal State system, and also UT San Antonio, I believe, that in their article they talk about particularly the pedagogy and the instruction that was based on the experiences from the spring that weren't so great. They really refined how they were going to do their since they committed early to being fully online this fall. What that looks like, moving away from live only classroom instruction, moving away from full hour-long Zoom meetings, Zoom lectures, to more interactive in ways that they could, and also focusing on training for their faculty on this new world that they all had to operate in, and provide them the resources they need to better reach their students and educate their students and engage with their students during the course of an online semester. So we'll see how that goes, but they certainly have put the time and effort in to make sure that they are ready for that fully online term, even though from an international perspective, it means they're not going to have those students on campus for the most part, at least the returning or the new students. But what they have also, one of the components in the pedagogy in education has been a focus on asynchronous options. And that is absolutely critical for international students that are starting their online experiences from their home countries that aren't physically going to be present, that could be 12 hours or more difference in time from the time courses would be normally be done live. And that makes a big deal, makes a big difference in terms of how students can and will be able to learn. And they also focused on bandwidth, on reducing a lot of heavy video content in these courses. So we've really seen some colleges that have committed online early and committed to hybrid, have really focused on the elements, and not just in the classroom, but also on campus, what that meant and what that looked like for faculty, for students, for staff. And that's made a difference for them. So it's really important, I think, as we conclude this first question, that winning is obviously a relative term. Surviving is probably the one that's going to be, in the long run, the more appropriate term to talk about this fall and even this year, academic year, before we might see a return to normalcy. So that's it for the first question. Second question, how can you leverage student successes? And this is meant primarily to talk about how universities and colleges around the country, particularly in this time where we have a lot of uncertainty, a lot of disruption to normal methods of recruitment, to normal ways of communicating, to normal expectations of students, to our own individual work circumstances. So much has changed. But at the core, our message as colleges and universities, at what we say as admissions officers, as international recruiters, is valuable up to a point in the college search for international students. The reality is the best recruiters for most universities are their current students. And when you have students that are successful in a variety of ways, whether we're talking about alumni that have graduated and gone on to become leaders and founders of businesses and all of these wonderful things that can and do happen, and you can leverage those, capture those stories, leverage those stories in your recruitment, part of that is important. That's leveraging success, the student successes. But when we talk more directly about your current students, involving them in the process, and I'm going to be sharing with you at the end of today's midweek roundup a link to a live chat I'm doing in about an hour or half hour's time from now at the end of this podcast. Folks at Unibuddy are having road shows this week where they do some virtual chats with experts in the industry, and I'll be their guest today talking about communicating effectively with international students and what the best strategies are. And one of those I'll be talking about is one that they believe in fully, is using your current students in your communication strategy with your prospective students. And we'll talk more about that. I'll share the link to that live chat at the end of this presentation of the roundup. But I wanted to share a great example from Penn State. They've just returned to class this past week, and they've gotten a lot of, they're one of those colleges that's starting to see a surge in COVID cases, but they had a profile this week in their state college newsletter, or newspaper, online version, that they titled, Penn State's New International Students, Theirs is a Story of Determination. And I hope to goodness that Mary Adams and her team in international admissions are able to leverage these stories, because this is exactly what we're talking about when in terms of making sure your current students are at the heart of your international student communication strategy. Because one of the subtitles of the article is Six Heroes from Six Nations. I mean, that just sells me right there, and so I want to read the rest of the story. This is fantastic. So they've taken a sampling of students from Mexico, Spain, Mongolia, China, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. These are students that are coming in at all levels. And they're all women that are profiled here, which is fantastic. That they're taking advantage of their successes in getting to campus. And they each have their own journeys that are explained through this article. And it's the kind of content that is absolute gold for international admissions, international student recruitment, that how they were able to navigate their way through a lot of different hoops, how they found out information about the United States, how they found information about Penn State in this case. And all of this is just so, so valuable in terms of the story. Obviously, it's a local newspaper story, but this particular version of it isn't for global distribution, but hopefully it gets leveraged that way. This is the kind of success that you want. And a success here for international students is coming and actually making it here as a new international student this fall. We've talked about it before with all the different variables that they've had to navigate that have been completely different than what a normal recruitment cycle would look like for an international student. That fact that they've been able to make it is, as I've said, they should win the Hunger Games for this, for the fact that they were able to make it through all the different obstacles and challenges to make it here to the U.S. and enroll successfully and have excellent stories to share as well. That's the kind of value when you can help paint a picture for a prospective student of what your current students have gone through to get where they are. And even some subtle things about where they were looking for information, how they found campus to be, things that can help explain and do the things that we can say as admissions officers about our colleges and our campuses, but the reality is our students do a much better job in convincing prospective students than we could ever do about how our campus will be for them. So I think these kind of successes that these students have had since in their journey to coming to the United States is absolutely everything that you need to be doing as an international educator, international admissions professional in recruiting your next class, is capturing these stories. And these stories matter because previous institutions I've worked at, we always made it a priority during the orientation week where we would have international students coming in. I would schedule interviews, 10, 15-minute interviews, video interviews with some of the students that were coming from markets that I knew we could grow our population, our incoming student population in, that we'd prioritized and said in our strategic plan, these are countries we need to focus on. So we would identify those students ahead of time, set up time during the orientation week where we can pull them aside, give them 3 or 4 questions that we would they could prepare answers to, couple that would be off the cuff, and then record that content and then use that, capturing their excitement of orientation. They've just arrived, they're exhausted, but they're so excited to start their new journey. That enthusiasm is so infectious, and the kind of infectious that you want on your college campus and in your student communities. And this is the kind of thing that when you're able to capture this content, capture these great stories, and then repurpose them in your recruitment plans, in your communication strategies, in any virtual events that you're doing to engage those current students in what you're doing to recruit new ones that to come to campus, you're setting yourself up for success in that regard. So in terms of answering that question on how you can leverage student successes, it's capturing them first, having a plan in place on how you want to use that information to reach your future audiences. Those institutions that can do that successfully will be set up for success in the long run in the international student recruitment game. So our final topic of the day, why do virtual offerings matter so much today? And this might be the duh question of all duh questions to ask, but the reality is we're facing a world that is vastly different than anything we've experienced before in terms of what we as international admissions professionals are physically able to do. Different in terms of how we message out, different in terms of what we can physically be at, events that we can participate in around the world. We are not traveling this year. That's just a reality. This fall, and maybe that will even extend into the spring. And the odds are that it probably will for recruitment travel. And what does that mean? It means the three main pillars of international recruitment, you're left with your partners overseas and your armchair recruitment in terms of your digital plan. So there are a lot of different pieces of that puzzle for what a digital plan looks like. But to answer the question about why do virtual offerings matter so much today, is plain fact is you can't be everywhere. In fact, you can't be anywhere personally, physically, as a U.S. international-based admission officer. You might have staff. I mean, if you're at a campus that is lucky enough to have overseas partners, that's great. But they that can do some of the work for you, but they still, students still want a connection with your institution and the people who work and or study at your institution. So the virtual plan is, and I'll be sharing next week an article that just came out that I wrote for IDP Connect USA on when travel's not an option, what do you do? And it goes into describing these two main areas, and we'll cover that more next week. But the virtual piece is something that I think is particularly relevant because every school, international school around the world, has been besieged by requests from institutions to do virtual visits, to do a webinar here, a virtual visit there, to presentations left, right, and center, all of that. It's really overwhelming, and from some schools have been able to be proactive and set up systems for visits. I recall seeing one on a Facebook group last week where it's a U.S. school, but a prestigious private school they have a new policy that says they're not going to accept any visits from schools that are not test optional or test blind this current year, and they're doing that for public health and equity access issues. And I found that obviously a very brave step for this school, this guidance counselor to take. obviously has the backing of his school in that respect, at a time when testing, SAT, ACT testing should be the last thing students should be forced to go through at this stage, given the nature of the global pandemic and what testing actually means in terms of physically getting together in larger groups to be examined and stressed while wearing a mask and doing all these other social distancing things. So the virtual piece is a priority because schools that are able to successfully pivot to, here's that word again, to an online focused and even online only digital strategy that includes a healthy dose of social media at different points in the process, that includes a lot of live events, live virtual events, that includes having text chats regularly or text options or chat options available for prospective students on demand or live, to have a e-communication plan that involves your current students as well in the process to help paint those pictures for you. And I'll share a particular story, relevant story this week. One of my jobs that I have with my consulting business is to run recruitment tours and events for UWC. United World Colleges are a network of 19 schools, secondary schools around the world, that are IB schools that are focused on not only students who are academically able and local students that are in a local area around the in where the schools are located that have the resources to attend a school like that, but also they are schools that help high achievers but low financial ability students to attend, and those students in particular, UWC students, are attractive to 99 right now U.S. Davis partner institutions. Davis Foundation helps fund a lot of these schools overseas, but also provides scholarship dollars for those students to attend U.S. colleges that are also able to provide substantial financial aid. So for these high ability, low or no financial ability students, they between the universities and the Davis Foundation can provide up to full tuition and full rides for these students. So we provided a college fair environment yesterday. We called them the UWC Virtual Visit Days. First one was yesterday, focused on providing 48 Davis partner institutions, colleges here in the U.S., access to students from 13 different UWC schools around the world that attended the live event, registered in advance, attended the live event. We did presentations on three topics that their counselors had requested, on need-based financial aid, on the importance of essays and admissions, and the transition to U.S. college life, campus life. So those presentations were followed by a two-hour college fair where students could visit the different rooms for each of the colleges involved, and many of them had their current UWC students that were on their campus helping out in those rooms, answering questions from a student perspective, again, from a current student perspective that helped paint those pictures of what life was like for them on campus. And the interactions were fantastic. The comments back from counselors from the UWC schools after chatting with their students have been fantastic. The comments back from university representatives on how they saw the event go. Some of them had full rooms for the entire 2 hours. Others had two or three students come by every few minutes and had conversations that were productive and in-depth conversations and valuable conversations. And this was for schools from around the country, from all four corners of the United States, including Ivy League schools and large public institutions. So it was a very successful event, one we're doing again on September 22nd to incorporate the rest of the UWC community. And it's one that we think is repeatable, certainly in the future, and can be a success when students are involved and are at the core, both current and prospective students are at the core of what we do, why we do what we do. And hopefully that's why you do what you do. So those virtual options are so important. And for those that want to hear a little bit more about my thoughts on the communication strategies for international students, join in the Unibuddy chat that I'll be involved in at 2 p.m. Eastern time today. I'm dropping the link in here in the comments section, and hope to see you there as well. So thanks very much for being here today on the Roundup. Looking forward to catching up with you all again at a time and date, hopefully in person in the future. Cheers.